Evidently, the song leaders and others that have been up here do not have the same nervousness about electronics that I do. I don't know what you guys do to these things sometimes. Now, I got a handle on this stuff. Now, in the service, I went through all the electronics courses with the terminal and fixing radars. And I come out with a healthy respect for electronics. There's three things I learned. One, it's all magic. You don't mess with it. Two, if it's in there and it's running, you don't even dust it. Don't touch it, don't whatever. You know, there's so many things that can go wrong, so just let it do its thing. And three, if it breaks, you can fix it by painting it green. So that's the military version of these things. With that being said, I hope this presentation works. You guys made me really nervous. Shut the thing down, unplugging the wires. I love when the songbooks go on here or whatever like that, and the projector goes down about 3 inches or something like that. So it's, you know, projecting off the floor. So I never know what I'm going to find when I get up here. I try to get up here early, you know, to make sure everything's fine. But then we have song leaders. Who knows what they're going to do with everything. And I have no idea what Don dropped. So what we're going to do here is, you know, I talked about probably doing a little change up on Sunday nights. This morning we were looking at, you know, I mentioned the fact that, you know, some of the various things we can do, varying topics and things. One is just to look at doctrine, which gives us a structure for the things that we know in, you know, our life. And as we did this morning, we can look at things that enhance the spirit, that help us to grow and mature, you know, in the spiritual realm. And other things have to do with just issues that are on there. In fact, from what was read by Dave, you know, that opened it up for all sorts of social issues, you know, that probably need to be dealt with. And so we're going to try to do a few of these, you know, through the handouts. You know, some people wanted the handouts again. You can never win. So we got the handouts and we got, you know, a little bit of slide presentation. And we're going to cover two subjects because they kind of blend together. Now, the first one could be a whole thing on itself. We'll probably come back to it at some point. But we're looking at, and I'm trying to use the euphemism here, extramarital intimacy. You adults know, nod your head, you know what we're talking about, so you don't have to go like this for the little kids. So we're having an adult discussion here, and we're leaving the kids out. Unfortunately, when you have 8-year-olds that are, you know, having these problems, I have a feeling some of the 8-year-olds know more about this stuff than I do. Anyway, so we're going to look at that and something that's coupled with it, the problem of abortion, you know, which is pretty viral, you know, in this culture. Starting with Isaiah 55:9, it tunes us into, as we study the scriptures, where God says, "For the heavens are higher than the earth, as the heavens are higher than the earth, so my ways are higher than your ways." So a man thinks he knows what it's all about. He's got it all figured, but his knowledge, not the epi-knowledge of God, but just the general knowledge, is tainted with his desires and his passions. You know, he looks at things the way he wants to look at them, and that's the problem of the society. As we go through this very quickly, we're looking at the problem of, you know, fornication, adultery, you know, those kind of relationships. They're coming so commonplace. Things that are being done outside of the marriage bond that people don't even know they're wrong anymore. I mean, through all cultures, you have very smart people that do, you know, very base things. And they've always got, you know, reasonings for it, or, you know, cute little quips, you know, a little, you know, sin here every once in a while isn't bad or whatever. Not realizing there's no such thing as a little sin. But they have their excuses, whatever. But there's consequences to these things, and this is what is also happening, along with the problem of adultery, fornication, whatever, is the compounded error of abortions that are becoming prevalent in this nation. So the two, this, I've joined them together because the two seem to go hand in hand now. And this is, you know, what we're trying to do is look at the wisdom of God, which is often the only thing that can guide us through this mess. And surprisingly, even though they're current social issues, they're issues that even though people think, well, this is the evolution of society and, you know, the new way of living and stuff like that, not realizing there's nothing new about it. This goes back to the same old immorality that we've had since the beginning of mankind. And surprisingly, it was even worse in the first century than it is now. And Christianity dealt with it. And so we have to go to God's, you know, wisdom. And surprisingly, even though we think of it as updated problems, it's still God's wisdom from, you know, 2,000 to 4,000 years ago, you know, accurately handles it. And that's what we're going to do. Okay? Look at that. First of all, jump ahead in some of this stuff. You've got the handouts. You can read most of it. So I just want to highlight certain things. First of all, is Hebrews 13:4. Let the marriage be held in honor among all. Okay? Now, this is an imperative. This is a command of God. Yeah. As you look at marriage, this is something that God put together. It's one of the very first laws that we have, the marriage law. And as he says, you know, where what God has joined together, let no man put asunder, that covers a lot, especially in this day and age where people want to, they want to legislate what marriage is. Okay, in a lot of places they're having, you know, bills being passed, being voted, decisions by the courts that, you know, marriage can be between, you know, two people of the same gender, thank you. And, you know, even in California, I know people are trying to marry their dogs and stuff. So what God has said in this simple statement, okay, as you're looking to define marriage, if God wouldn't join you, you're not married. That list in Leviticus, he says are things that are abomination to him. Those are things that are worthy of death. If God considers those, all the different things, something that, you know, are abomination, he wouldn't join them in marriage. And that's the bottom line. If God doesn't put it together, it's not a marriage. Okay? So if you're living in adultery, you know, if you're, you know, trying to do all these other abominations, aberrations or whatever, away from it, you're fooling yourself, you know, if you think the legislation is, you know, is going to make it all right. You can have a ton of paperwork that says what you're doing is fine, but if God doesn't say it's okay, you're not married. Let the marriage bed be undefiled. That means what goes into that bed is a man and a woman, you know, for the first time in most cases. Anything else goes in that marriage bed, two guys, you know, a guy and three girls, you know, the farm animals, whatever, you know, that's something that's absolutely forbidden. Absolutely. It's strange that people don't realize that nowadays. And they think anything goes. Even further, when men starts to legalize something, from 1 Corinthians 6, the gist of it is, you know, from, as we've seen back in the Minor Prophets, and it goes back to the time when the Israelites got into Canaan. I mean, men not only try to legalize things with paperwork, they also try to make them religious. And just about every pagan culture, you'll find that what they've done is put women in the temples in which men can go in and fornicate with the women, and they think they're doing religious devotion to their god, and the god is sanctioned. It's the way they work around these things. And this is what Paul is arguing against here. Okay? In fact, as you get into 1 Corinthians 7, where it talks about, you know, when you have a marriage, that the wife has authority over the husband has authority over the wife. And what's it saying? It says, basically, you're submitting to another person. You're turning yourself over to them. Now, if they're a godly person, what you're doing in the marriage is, then it is a proper devotion to God. Now, think about it. And more is involved into it than just recreation. But if you're going into a temple and you're doing it with someone, okay, it's not authorized by God. It's an abomination. You've joined yourself to not only a person you shouldn't, but you've also joined yourself to a demon a demonic cult. That's what you've surrendered yourself to. So the implications sometimes are far beyond what men can even imagine is going on here. Deuteronomy 22, in such a case, you know, I think the stress here is God's view of intimacy. Not necessarily the need for the marriage, but just how what God, you know, says. If, I think it's more of a case where, you know, two people couldn't wait. And the young person, after they've been physically intimate, might say, well, I'm not ready yet. And God says, yeah, you are now. Okay. Now, I'm only going to take it that far because I cannot see where, if someone's been brutally abused, that a loving father would allow this, you know, jerk to marry his daughter. Yeah, I don't think it's pushing it that far. So that's the stress I think that's there. But if a man is found, you know, adultery, you know, two people, you know, they're found doing this kind of stuff, under the old law, it was a capital of punishment. That's how serious it was. The two people, the man and the woman, were taken aside and put to death. Okay? We've lost all that. Okay? In 1 Corinthians 6:9, Paul said, do you not know? Eletodes again, meaning you definitely know. This has been taught to you over and over again. You know that the unrighteous will not inherit the kingdom of God. What our young people are doing so freely now, God says, okay, you do it and you come into the assembly. You may think you're coming to church and into God's kingdom, but you're not. If you're doing this sort of stuff, you're outside of God's kingdom. Fornicators and adulterers have no part of the kingdom of God. You have no inheritance in it. It's serious. And we've got to get that seriousness back into our minds, in our hearts, you know, especially among the young. Okay. Now, heading to the subject of abortion, the problems that arise from this issue, the question is, at what point is an unborn child considered to be a living human being? Now, this is only a question in the minds of people who, you know, want to get into physical intimacy and then have a product of it and want to get rid of it. The byproduct of it. And they're going to come up with all sorts of things. Well, yeah, I don't want to be guilty of murder or taking a life or whatever, so I'm going to let it slide as to when this thing is really human. And they keep moving the trimesters and everything else, you know, closer to birth. And now we even have an abortion where they'll pull the child out, the partial birth abortions. I mean, these are horrendous. You know, have you ever seen the videos and stuff of what they're doing? In fact, at this point, was it Abby Johnson used to work for Planned Parenthood? And she used to tell the mothers and stuff like, no, it's not really murder or anything like that. You know, it's not really a human yet. Until she watched sonograms, okay, and the doctor actually putting the probe in to kill the fetus. And the fetus, you know, it had all the formation, it had little hands and stuff. And she says when she saw that fetus start to push away from that probe, it just sickened her. She realized this thing was alive. And she'd been lying to all these women that had come into it. But there's even more than that. As to the question of which, when life starts, Dr. McCarthy DeMere, the exact moment of the beginning of personhood in the human body is the moment of conception. It's not 3 months into it or 6 months or whatever. Science says that life starts at conception. Now, well, this is just one doctor. Well, how about one doctor with, you know, good credits? Okay. To accept the fact that after fertilization has taken place, a new human has come into being is no longer a matter of taste or opinion. It is a plain experimental evidence. Dr. Jerome Lejeune, the father of modern genetics. Okay? You want more proof? This is from official Senate report, Senate Bill 158. Physicians, biologists, and other scientists agree that conception marks the beginning of the life of a human being. a being that is alive and is a member of the human species, there is overwhelming agreement on this point in countless medical, biological, and scientific writings. It's a done deal. Science says that thing becomes a human being at the moment of conception. Where's all this argument in the papers coming from? They have no basis for whatever conjecture they have as to when this child is a human being. Many who decide to destroy the byproduct of their infidelity may also be adding a charge of murder then to what they're doing. Now, there's a lot of things, you know, that come out of this thing. You know, we have a crazy society where murderers are allowed to live, you know, but innocent children are put to death. Now, the numbers are staggering. You know, 1,600,000 babies a year are aborted. Okay. Since Roe versus Wade, more than 50 million children, you know, have been, in essence, murdered, killed. Now, the arguments that come out of this, for a woman to say, well, it's my body and I have a right. Well, from this, the child has a right too. You think you have a right of choice? You do. You have a right to choose not to become a fornicator or an adulterer, you know, so that you don't get into the situation. There's a lot of people that make that mature choice to wait. And they find a way to do it until they want to have a family. And they're able to have a family. All the arguments are an immaturity that's set forth in order to do what you want to do. And damn the consequences. Now, you may, you know, accuse the Christians of being intolerant. We're being very intolerant. The 50 million, you know, dead babies, that doesn't bother me. Now, what I see from a Christian perspective, I see 50 million innocent souls that went directly to God. And they're set. What we worry about is the doctors and the women who commit these atrocious acts. It's their souls we're worried about. We're the only ones that are worried about that. Don't tell me I'm being intolerant. The money, there's another issue that will drive you up the wall. You have to pay for these things. The people that don't do this have to pay for somebody else to do it. State of California, 1 year, the statistics were, not statistics, but the actual count was $13 million spent on abortion by the state for women that wanted abortion. The state paid for it, which means we paid for it. I mean, that's a lot of money for people that supposedly, you know, did something that, you know, that perhaps it was just a fluke or whatever. But there was another 1 to 2 million spent on secondary abortions, tertiary abortions. I mean, they kept doing it. They kept fooling around, having babies and having them, you know, put them, you know, to death. And we had to pay for it. Don't tell me you don't have a say in this. Okay? Now, I know, you know, there's a lot of things that I don't have any control over. If you want to commit suicide, okay, you're going to commit suicide. There's not much I can do about it. But don't ask me to pay for the bullets. That makes me culpable. Don't ask me to pay for your abortion. You want an abortion, you want contraceptives, whatever, but don't make me pay for it. Okay? There's a big money thing here. I mean, the push is, you know, it's a big money issue that's out there. The contraceptives, the morning after pills, that's big bucks. This is why these things are pushed. You know, it becomes a political problem, not a scientific, not a religious. They've got it out of those realms because the scientific and the religious say, you've done something you shouldn't. But the politics comes in and people think they can gloss it all over with bills. And they can't. The Bible also is very definitive when it comes to when a person is a person. Notice here in Exodus 21, strike a woman with child so that she has a miscarriage. Now, if the child lives, these two guys are fighting, they happen to bump into a pregnant woman, and she has a miscarriage. If the child is still okay, there's just a fine. Okay. But if the child dies, further injury, then you shall appoint as penalty life for life. This is the Old Testament. Eye for an eye, tooth for a tooth. Okay, if you cause a woman to miscarriage and the baby dies, it's considered a life in God's sight. And you have to give your life up for it. Equal status. There are also many times when, and this is something that the world doesn't consider at all, and this might even be a bigger issue. God has plans for people, even before they're born. I mean, as you look at, we looked at Cyrus. God is talking about this guy named Cyrus who he's going to turn a kingdom over to, and the guy's not even born yet. He's 200 years down the line. Or this king called Josiah among the Israelites, who's going to be probably the best king they ever had. And he's talking about this guy by name 250 years before he comes about. What if Joseph had decided to have an abortion? Man, we'd all be totally messed up. I mean, this is the whole point in Luke 1. And the angel said to her, "Do not be afraid, Mary, for you have found favor with God. And behold, you will conceive in the womb and bear a son, and you shall name his name Jesus." I mean, God had a lot of plans for Jesus before he was even born. You call his name Emmanuel. He's got all sorts of these names for him. He's got all these plans for him. And if Joseph and Mary just decided, to have, get away from the responsibility and get rid of the child, the whole human race would not have salvation. But even more, if you look at these things, Psalms 190, "Thou didst weave me in my mother's wombs," the psalmist says, "thine eyes have seen my unformed substance." There's something there even before conception that God's aware of, that soul that he breathes into man to make him a living being. He's aware of it before the physical starts. In case of Jeremiah, "Then the word of the Lord came to me, saying, before I formed you in the womb, I knew you. Before you were formed, I knew you." Isaiah said, "Take heed, you peoples from afar. The Lord has called me from the womb, from the inward parts of my mother. He has made mention of my name." Set him aside as a prophet. Galatians, Paul says, "And when he who had set me apart even from my mother's womb and called me through his grace was pleased," whatever. So you have prophets and apostles, Old, New Testament, where God had plans for people before conception, or at least right after. So when we start committing these things, the horrendous things, we may not only be guilty of murder, we can be guilty of interfering with God's plans. He's going to have to go another way. And you really don't want to buck God in this life. Ecclesiastes 11:5, "Just as you do not know the path of the wind and how bones are formed in the womb of a pregnant woman, so you do not know the activity of God who makes all things." He's involved in all of this. He's involved in life and the plans for the child, in people's lives and whatever. And you really don't want to mess with that. And in fact, we are messing with it. We are messing with things we do not understand. You may think it's just, it's recreational stuff what we're doing. It's never recreational. You may say, we're consenting adults. That's fine, but God's not consenting. And you can't just have it a simple relationship. Just make it physical and then part your ways. You do not understand that you're dealing with a very complicated human being. It's almost like the computers. It's like, even go back, if you've got a television set, you ever seen the little warning tag on the back, "Don't take the back off this thing"? Why? Because there's condensers in there, pretty big ones, or used to be. And even if that thing's been sitting in the garage for 6 months, you pull the back off and you lift it up, it happens to touch your belt buckle. Adios. You just got 60,000 aqueduct voltage through in you. Man, you've just been slammed across, you know, the garage floor. And where you end up, there better not be tools on that wall. You just impaled yourself. Even a computer, you take the back off of that. You know, if you just have a static charge built up in you and you touch that thing, you might as well set it out in a thunderstorm and let a lightning strike it. You'll do that much damage to it because it's very small circuitry and the least little spark, you know, can kill the thing beyond repair. And people are a lot more complicated. You really don't know what you're messing with, physically, spiritually, mentally. Okay. You don't understand relationships. The people that decide they just want to live together for a while to see how it goes. You know, when I took psych classes, one of the studies that came out of it was the fact that when people live together and then break up, the psychological impact is a lot more devastating than if somebody had been married and got divorced because they're not aware they're making all these little connections, relationship connections. And we're fearfully and wonderfully made, and we're complicated, and we can damage things, maybe beyond repair. And I told you the story when I was over at the station over in Japan. You know, a friend came up to me and said, you know, his wife had been over visiting. And he says, you know, here's the story. I've been fooling around with other women. She's been fooling around with other men. We decide of all the people we've been with, we like each other, you know, the best. And we're going to stay together and make the marriage work. But here's the problem. It's nothing special anymore. They damaged something. And you do not know just exactly what kind of jinking you're doing to your mind, and all those neural connections in your spirit that's tied to it. And you start doing things God tells you not to, because he tells you not to for a reason. He wants the very best for you. He wants you to grow, have good relationships, to get the most out of it. And you do not do that by making it the barest minimal physical thing that there is. You're doing damage. You're doing damage. Okay, one might, how people justify things, I think that just this one, when taking the potential life of a child to say the actual life of a mother, okay, when you're getting down to it, okay, now this is an argument made by Giesler, who's a pretty smart guy, in his ethics, Christian ethics, but I disagree with this. Now, I'll tell you why. Look at the child, if it's going to ruin the health of the mother, okay, you can decide to take the child's life because a potential life is not the same as an actual life. Okay, here's a problem, and I had to reword this. Your handouts are all messed up. Okay, in fact, I think I tried to put two things together and it didn't come out. But one might be tempted to judge that what a person does is more important than their intrinsic value to God. So you might say, well, the mother is a doctor, and if the baby is threatening her life, then just get rid of the baby because it really hasn't developed any potentiality yet. We don't know what's going to happen to it, but we know what the mother's going to be. So, you know, save the mother and not the child. Okay. But to the contrary, an unborn child might seem to have more value, you know, as you look at it, saying, well, the mother's a prostitute, but the child's still innocent. Wouldn't you judge the child to have more value than the mother? But they're both got souls. We overlook that. And both are precious to God. Notice, Rahab was a harlot, Joshua 2:1. And she figured in the salvation of the Israelite spies and in the lineage of Jesus. So that's the kind of a judgment we can't make. I'll tell you what, okay? Just another caution, you know, always seek alternatives. Don't ever take the either or that somebody gives you. Okay, so the story of Alan Ladd. I don't know, you kids probably don't know who Alan Ladd is. Very famous movie star when I was younger. Okay, now, his wife was having complications, you know, with her pregnancy. And the doctor came out and goes, you know, Mr. Ladd, you're going to have to make a decision. Do we save the child's life or do we save the mother's life? And he just looked at him very soberly and goes, you will save them both or it's going to be your life. The doctor went back in and saved them both. Yeah. No telling what a little motivation will do in a situation. And I think the child didn't have to be Cheryl Ladd, you know, one of the original angels. So all these decisions, you know, sometimes you can get to the point where you get really hard decisions to make that shouldn't be there if you just, you know, went with God to begin with. And he'll see, you know, he'll see you through all these things. A lot of this you have to leave to God. We're kind of running out of time, so for the rest of this, you can read it. Handicapped lives, you know, still are, you know, very important. Things can be fixed. Not justified. Like I said, you can read through this if you have any questions. There's one thing, statistic. Yeah, I gave you the whole thing, but I want to point out something on this. Because women say, well, you know, what? Yeah, the big argument, what if in the case of rape, you know, all this kind of stuff. Do you know how many instances that happens? Here is the reason most, you know, women give for abortions. They feel unready for the responsibility of children. Then why were you messing around? Maturity. Okay, we just covered almost 30% of the reasons that women give for, you know, aborting children. Okay, they feel they can't afford a baby. Okay, there's a lot of things you may not be able to afford. Most people, if they think they can't afford something like a house, they don't buy into it. So if you feel you can't afford a child, why are you messing around and trying to make one? We're up to over 50%. Well, I've got other family responsibilities. All right, well, you had enough time in order to do this, so you, the responsibilities couldn't have been that heavy. Okay, now we're up to almost, you know, 75% of the reason why women have abortions. None of them good. They're all the mark of immaturity. Don't tell me you're a consenting adult, you're a consenting child. You've got no reason doing what you're doing. Okay, like I said, I just want to hit some of these. I love this one. When to decide not to jump off a cliff is not on the way down. Okay, you make that decision before you take the leap. And the same with all this messing around. Deformities, yeah, deformities can be fixed over, probably more than that, this is probably an old statistic. The way medical science is advantaged, yeah. Have the child, okay. Notice in John 9, even deformities, the disciples ask him, okay, this man's been blind, is it because of some sin that he did? And God says, no, it's not because of the sin, it was that the works of God might be displayed in him. Something special is going to come out of this. Okay? That's what you got to look for. Kind of glossed over it, but in most cases where people have something that's wrong with them, look at how they overcome them. Okay? I've told you about J.A.R. Arms. He lost his hands when he was 8 years old and became the head of an international, you know, investigation company. He's got two hooks. He says he wouldn't trade him for hands because of what he can do with him. He does 500 push-ups on those hooks every morning. He can punch through plexiglass. He can reach into fires to retrieve documents. He can slide down metal cables. He even had a gun implanted so that just with a, you know, flex of a muscle, he can shoot somebody. I've seen stories, you know, of men that had one leg but they were black belts in judo or were in a wheelchair and they got a, you know, black belt in karate. You know, they overcome stuff. An individual who was an artist who lost his arms but learned to paint with his feet or his mouth. You know, Jody does that. Okay, and I love the statement of one guy who was in an accident and he lost his arms, and the reporter asked him, well, how do you feel about that? He says, I feel fine with it. I'd rather have it happen to me than somebody who couldn't handle it. I mean, deformities bring the human spirit up. And it taps into all those that are around them. So, you know, Don't try to be smarter than God in any of this. And what can we do? First of all, as parents, know what you're up against in the schools. What are your teachers teaching? Because they're influencing your children. Get it fixed in the school or get the kid out of the school and start homeschooling. Okay? Find out what's on the political horizons. There's some people up there that are really messed up that are running for office. Get them out of office. Make sure they can't get there. Talk to your neighbors or whatever. In fact, that's the other thing. As Christians, talk to your children about these subjects. Talk to your family. Talk to others, your neighbors, the people you work with. Get the message out. Let them know what the science says. Let them know what God says. And that's what they did in the first century, and that's what we have to do now. That's how we deal with the issues. And as we mentioned, God can deal with anything. It's surprising. It's almost like whatever disease man comes up with, and sometimes we think we get rid of them because of men's finagling and messing around. In fact, in the their free love in the 60s, they started coming up with diseases we thought we got rid of 100 years ago, just because of the filth and what they lived in and things they did. Man has a tendency to mess his life up if he doesn't follow what God says. But whatever that comes up, it's interesting that God has in the human body something already designed to deal with it. I mean, it's interesting what the white corpuscles, the antibodies in your body, they're in all sorts of different shapes. They're like one prong or three prong or whatever. And what they do is they try to match up all the different things that you have, tries to match up with whatever virus is in your body. Meaning you don't have to evolve it. God has already put it in there. It attaches to it and flushes it out. It's already there. And in the scriptures, the same way. Whatever kind of mess man can get into, what kind of sin that takes over his life and his culture, there's help in the scriptures. God has already dealt with it. He knows everything that man's going to do to mess up his life, and he knows how to fix it. And so we need to come to God. We have to figure these things out beforehand to realize what God wants, the direction he's given us. A little ounce of prevention is better than the pound of cure. Be good people. And he'll stand by you. It really will. I mean, when I was in the service, man, because I didn't do a lot of the things that the guys were doing, I had money. I didn't have to stand in an STD line Monday morning. There's a lot of things I didn't have to worry about. Just because, lived an appropriate lifestyle. And this is what God is calling us to live a right kind of life that you can have the best out of life now and something great in the hereafter. So the invitation is extended. Won't you come and serve God as we stand to sing?